Okay, we're going to take your phone calls next. Brother Guy, Consul Manio is our special guest, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM. Brother Guy, do you see anything controversial, write anything controversial that makes someone at the Vatican go, uh-huh?
It hasn't happened yet. I don't know that anyone's paying that much attention, but there was one time I got myself quoted in a Scottish newspaper. They were asking me about creationism, and I said creationism is a kind of pagan superstition. So a lot of creationists sent me nasty emails, and a lot of pagans sent me nasty emails too.
You can't win.
Absolutely.
You can't win. Let's take some phone calls while we chat. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, sir, and where are you calling from?
My name is Tony. I'm calling from Cape Coral, Florida.
Great, Tony. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks, George. And, brother, this has got to be one of my top three shows listening, you know, that I've listened to. So kudos to you too, George. Basically, I wanted to just say that, you know, shout out to my daughter, Kaylee, who's 17 now. When she was very young, about 3 or 4 years old, I told her where Orion's belt was. And anytime we'd go outside, she'd be able to point it out for me. So the two questions I have, brother, is the Vatican, or you in particular, looking for a certain celestial event to occur that's either biblically related or prophecy related? And the second question is, have you seen a black hole in space through the great, you know, powerful telescopes, and how cool is it? And I'll take my answers offline.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Great show.
All right, Tom.
I love that story about you and your daughter. I have to say, I learned astronomy from my dad, who was a navigator in World War II. And astronomy is just one of those things that you don't need any equipment. You just need dark skies to go out and lie down in the grass and take a look at the sky. It's wonderful. About looking for a celestial event, I'll tell you exactly what I was told to do when I arrived at the Vatican Observatory, my marching orders.
You were told to do?
I was told to do one thing, and that was do good science. That was it. I had the complete freedom to choose the science I was going to do the research that I found interesting, to work with the people outside the Vatican, my colleagues here at the telescope. Bill Romanishin is from University of Oklahoma. Steve Teclu is from Northern Arizona. They're the ones handling the telescope while I'm playing hooky with you guys. I work with, you know, other scientists just doing the same regular science that everyone else does. We are not looking for anything particular that was in the Bible or, you know, whispered to the Pope at Fatima or anything like that. And as for seeing a black hole, you can't see a black hole because it doesn't give off light. That's why they call it a black hole. What you can see are the effects that you can attribute to a black hole. You can see brilliant flashes of energy that come from the center of galaxies. Or you can see how material at the center of the galaxy is moving very quickly around the center, which tells you that there is a lot of mass right at the center. And that sort of material you can see, that's actually quite spectacular.
Okay, the dark matter, dark energy controversy. Do you take a position there?
I'm not a cosmologist. You know, in the world of astronomy, the farther away it is in space and time, the higher your reputation. And I'm right down with little meteorites and asteroids that are close to the Earth, so I'm at the bottom of the file there. There is a cosmologist who works at the Vatican Observatory. He's a brilliant fellow, student of Sir Martin Rees. And as he's explained it to me, we call it matter because we see gravitational effects. We call it dark because we can't see whatever it is that's doing it. Dark energy, we know that there's this energy that's causing the galaxies to accelerate. We don't know what it is. We can't see it, so we call it dark. But really, these names are nothing more than expressions of our ignorance. And who knows what it could be?
That's the bottom line.
Absolutely.
Parallel universes. Are you a believer that there could be more than just one?
That there could, yes. Do we have evidence? Sure evidence? Well, again, the cosmologists I've talked to say that in some ways, there actually is ways you can see evidence of possible parallel universes. It's, again, something that's halfway between science and science fiction. A lot of fun to think about, and certainly possible.
First time caller line. You're on the air with Brother Guy on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hi, George. This is Gary. I'm calling you from Lihue, Kauai, the island of, in the state of Hawaii.
Long phone call. Go ahead, Gary.
Phone call. Okay. The question goes to earlier in the interview when you were talking to Brother Guy about fallen angels.
Right.
I don't want to get heavy into theology or anything like that, but his answer came, and Brother Guy, I'm talking to you at the same time, came down to pretty much an absence of good. And kind of what I have a number of questions, but I'm only hitting on this one. And I congratulate George, you, and Brother Guy for doing what you're doing tonight. I mean, it's through the roof. But what does that say within the church in relation to exorcisms, the demonic things like that? In other words, in an exorcism, then, are we trying to implant a whole bunch of good because there's an absence of it? Now, I'd like a little bit of elaboration on evil being the absence of good. And are we totally eliminating an entity, or that would be, you know? I'm going to let you guys read between the lines and kind of give me an answer.
Okay, thanks.
Right. Well, there was, of course, a religion that was around at the time of Christ called Zoroastrianism, and still exists in Iran and places like that, that posit that there was a good God and an evil God, and you have to choose which one. Christianity doesn't believe that. It says there's one God. So how do you explain evil? Evil are the places where, you know, we free will people have rejected God. We've said, we don't want you. Go away. We're going to do it ourselves. Beyond that, your description of an exorcism, I never heard it described that way, but that's a wonderful, wonderful way of putting it, that what you're trying to do when you're trying to drive out evil is really what you're trying to do is to insert good. I like that. I'm going to use that.
Will you stay, Brother Guy, or will you become a priest?
No, I'm always a brother. I entered the Jesuits quite late in life. I was about 40 when I came in.
How old are you now?
55.
That's not late. I'm older than you.
Yeah, by a couple of years.
You could call me older Brother George.
That's it, exactly. But, no, it's one of those things that when I felt the call, and, you know, that's such a cliche, except that's exactly what it felt like when I had this urge, now is the time to become a Jesuit, and it was to become a Jesuit brother. And I'm thinking, why brother? You know, just, you know, get to do a lot more fun things when you're a priest. But, no, being a brother is the right thing for me, and I think that's what God wants me to do.
Well, you have a passion with your interest in planetary science.
Mm-hmm. But the other, you know, astronomers at the Vatican Observatory, they're all ordained, so that isn't necessarily it right there. I'm not quite sure why I feel that. Maybe it's just that being a brother reminds me I can't do it all myself, that I have to rely on my other brothers, on the other members of the community. And since, you know, as an adult, I'd lived on my own for about 20 years. Living in a community was something I really wanted.
I want to take this opportunity also right now, brother, to invite you back here as one of our regular guests as often as you can. I just admire you, and your presentation is absolutely superb.
Well, I'm having a lot of fun here. The question is, how often am I in North America? It's a little bit tougher to get me in Europe.
You know, though you're different from Father Malachi Martin, your presentation in your own way is just superb. And I've been looking for someone like you to be on this program for a long, long time.
Hmm. Oh, thank you.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I'm Mike from Chicago.
Chicago.
And, Father, I actually have a question that deep-rooted into my childhood. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I had a friend of mine who actually got very much turned off to the Catholic Church and everything because when she was a child, she was told that Fluffy wouldn't go to heaven. Somebody had mentioned, I heard something recently that really said scientifically that it's possible for animals to have souls because biologically they're made up very similar to humans. Is there a distinction between humans and animals as far as that's concerned?
It's funny. I had exactly this argument with my pastor when I was 6 years old. Except I took the other side. He said, you know, don't you think that angels have little puppy dogs? And I go, no, of course not. Animals don't have souls. Yeah. And I was very sure as only a six-year-old could be.
Yeah, that was the boy scientist.
That was the boy scientist in me, absolutely. You know, I was watching Sputnik go up, and I wanted to have all the right answers. The true answer is, of course, we have no idea. But the theological answer, this is, you know, I'm not a theologian. I'm only playing one on the radio. Thomas Aquinas defined a soul as intellect and free will. In other words, an entity has to be able to be aware that it is alive and that other entities are alive, and it has to be free to do something about it, to choose to interact with those things, to love them or to hate them. To what extent do animals have self-awareness? To what extent do they have the freedom? You know, I used to have a couple of cats, and it's a great mystery to me. I do think that there is a difference between human beings and animals in our ability to relate to the rest of the universe, is our ability to wonder about the stars, our ability to contemplate, to do art, to do music, to do dance. And yet, I'm not going to be one who says I've got the whole answer and it's got to be this way, and you know, you're not going to find Fluffy in heaven. But as I say, I'm not a theologian. Thanks.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us.
Hi. My name is John. I have a question for Brother Guy.
All right, John. He's ready to go.
As a scientist himself, I'm pretty sure he's heard of the 16 crucified saviors of the world that predate Jesus Christ. They all have the same story, the same everything, similar to Christ, and yet they predate him. So according to the church, their official explanation from what I understand is that the devil somehow went back in time, counterfeited the whole story, the whole mythology, so, you know, people would fall for it or whatever, you know. So how does he explain, you know, Jesus as a member of the Jesuit order, which is a Catholic kind of, you know, offshoot or whatever, and also the whole UFO thing, extraterrestrials coming down and visiting us, wouldn't that whole thing destroy, like, Christianity, the Vatican especially? He says it's a small little organization, but in reality, if you look at throughout history, it's a pretty powerful organization. Yeah, it might be run by a couple of people, but it's really powerful. It would destroy that whole thing, because then it's all of a sudden it would become an argument of, like, wait a minute, didn't God create us in his image, but yet there are these beings that are obviously more technologically and smarter than us, that could travel, you know, vast regions of space to get to us. So it's like, seems like they were favored by God. So I would want an answer to those questions by an actual official, you know, high up there from the church.
All right. Well, I don't think you're the official spokesperson for the church, Brother Guy, but go ahead. You can answer.
Well, he's got three different points here. The one is, I'd never heard it outlined the way that you described it. I've never heard anyone in the church say that this is, you know, the devil going back in time. But certainly C.S. Lewis talks about the common stories in mythology of the gods interacting with the human race. And his interpretation, which I always have enjoyed, is that these are all prefigurings of what actually happens in the arrival of Jesus Christ on earth. And in the story of Jesus Christ, in the history of Jesus Christ, you sort of find recapitulated all the great stories and all the great mythologies, from, you know, the teenager who saves the world to, you know, the obscure person who has this phenomenal effect on human history long after he's gone, to the bumbling sidekicks who somehow make it all work in the end. So that would be one way of answering that these are prefigurings of a central story that really is the central story of humanity. The idea that extraterrestrials would destroy Christianity, a lot of people who don't believe in religion believe that. Oddly enough, the people who do believe in religion say that finding extraterrestrials would support their religion. I think what it really comes down to is religion is one of those things that we accept as the axioms on which we build the rest of our view of the universe, and everything that we encounter we will interpret in light of what it is we've decided that we're going to believe or not believe.
The Nephilim, when they came down, might they have been extraterrestrials?
They might have been, or it might have been a confused story that somehow got shoved sideways into the Bible. I wasn't there. I don't know. And that third bit, though, about the created in his image, that's why I answered Mike from Chicago about Thomas Aquinas and the soul.
Right.
Because the image we're talking about is not, you know, how many tentacles you have or what color your skin is. The image is, do you have intellect? Do you have free will? Do you have the ability to be aware of your own existence and the ability to love things that are outside of yourself? If you've got that, then it doesn't matter what your level of technology is. And we learned that, you know, exploring the world, that someone who Europeans would have thought was a very primitive South Sea Islander is just as human and just as good as the most sophisticated snob in London.
Wildcard line, your turn. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, George.
Hi.
Good morning, Brother Guy.
Hi.
My question is, where did the idea of thinking or knowing in our heart start? I know that Jesus says it, you know, in the New Testament to his disciples, but I'm trying to discern where this idea that we think with our heart or we know something in our heart. I'd like to start my own research and find out where this idea came from.
That's a great question. I have no idea where the answer is. You're right. That's something that you do see in the Bible. I'm trying to think, do you see it in maybe ancient Greek plays as well?
Probably.
I think there may be something about how human beings are both rational and emotional. And that's a theme you find in literature going from, you know, ancient Greek plays to Star Trek. You know, you've got Mr. Spock and Captain Kirk. You've got the rational and you've got the emotional, and they work best when they work as a team.
Absolutely, except the one is not worth more than the many. Remember that special line?
Yes.
One of the classics. When we come back, I want to chat with you about the soul, and then we'll take some more phone calls. Do you have a website, Brother Guy?
I do. It's a simple Macintosh site, homepage.mac.com/brother_guy.
Okay, we'll make sure that Sean gets that up there linked up with your name at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. So we'll be back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, the producers are throwing behind the secret door at me. They're going to have a number of guests popping in, popping out. They're testing me. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with Brother Guy. We'll take your phone calls as our final segment. And here we go. Let's pick it up by going to our East of the Rockies line. Good morning. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
George.
Hi.
Hi. It's Roy in San Antonio.
Okay, Roy, take it away.
Thank you very much for carrying on our legacy.
You're welcome.
First off. And thank you both for the inspiration. And
thank
I
you.
Want to ask Dr. or Brother Lear, Brother Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is doctor. He has a PhD, so
yep.
That'll work.
Okay. Has he ever heard of John Lear?
I don't think so. John Lear, a former pilot, regular guest on Coast to Coast, Brother Guy, has his own theories on the soul and extraterrestrials. But go ahead. What's your question, Roy?
That was my question.
Oh, that was the question. Okay.
I have to say I'm not familiar with him or his work.
Next up, we'll go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. My name's Ken. I'm calling from Dallas. Listening to you guys talking about the celestial lineups and such and divine people that are divining and things, I've got something of a personal story that I'd like to tell you. One morning I was in the IHOP restaurant, and all of a sudden the group of tables of people were talking. And I started picking out, it was weird because it was like my ear was tuned to each conversation individually. And it was almost like channeling, or what I call speaking in tongues, because it was a sentence was being formed out of several tables and several conversations. And it was really strange because the radio was even playing a song. Everybody was mentioned something about a terrace. Go to a terrace, you know, like a walk on a moonlit terrace. That was what the song was playing.
Yeah.
Well, after hearing this for several minutes, it kind of disturbed me. So I finished my coffee and I got out of there. I didn't have a destination in mind. But the next thing you know, I'm standing at the Dallas Dart Light Rail. There's this silhouette on the terrace, and I'm looking up at it, and I'm just going like, well, why am I staring at this thing? And I realized, well, wait a minute, I'm standing on a terrace. And I look at it real closely, and on the bottom left-hand side, it started breaking it down. It's like a silhouette, like it's been broken away. In fact, I've even emailed you a picture of the silhouette, and you'll find it there on your email.
Okay, thanks.
But you look up at it, and on the bottom left-hand corner, it's a man and a woman standing on either side of a tree. And above it is a lion with a patch over its eye, and it's looking across an arch and an eye, which is like pi iota, at a rooster. And I'm sitting there going, like, why am I seeing this? And I'm sitting here staring at it, staring at it, staring at it. And all of a sudden, it was like this magnetic force told me, look at this thing upside down. And when I turned over, I might have looked ridiculous, but when I looked at it, it turned out to be a silhouette of me and my old roommate. Now, there's a spot that my father and I share on our shoulder, kind of like where Atlas was made to carry the weight of the world on his shoulder.
Yep.
And it's kind of like, is this something that I'm supposed to be sharing spiritually or physically, or what's happening to me? Well, I started doing a little bit more investigations. I started looking around, and I went up and down the Dallas Dart Light Rail, and right next to Texas Instruments, there's another station right there. And the artwork up there. It had what appeared to be a man or a bust of a man, and there was a dwelling pattern going through his head. And on the other side was a giant disc, or like a silicone disc. And I was thinking here, well, you know, this kind of reminds me of something, but I can't put my finger on. Why is there a dwell pattern in this man's head? And why is there a disc on the other side that reminds me so much of the sun disc? Like, maybe perhaps of Amun-Ra. And I look across, and there's this, like an aerial photograph of the neighborhood, and it says, oh, Lord, remember the city in which we live. And that kind of set me a spark. It's like, well, why is there a satellite photograph or an aerial photograph of the streets right here? Well, I went to the library a few days later and was looking at a satellite photograph of my old neighborhood, and in it there is what I believe that the Corps of Engineers has designed to be the large head of a bull, right? And just at the very crest, at the top of this, is where I grew up, at the head of the bull, and underneath a red roof. And this sounds kind of like when Lucifer was looking down across the rooftops in the Old Testament. And I'm just going like, well, why am I looking at this, the red roof of my house, which is a terracotta roof? Well, just below it is a pyramid, and this is all in the streets. It's a pyramid with the king's chamber in the center. And I'm just going like, well, this is really creeping me out. Just down the street from where I went to elementary school, looks like a stick figure of a dog, like a cave painting of a dog defecating my old school. Across the highway is another dog. It looks like a beagle, like a high-definition beagle.
Well, you know, I don't know where he's headed with this brother guy.
Well, it's why we have artwork. You know, it inspires people.
It inspires people.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to find out what kind of coffee he was drinking at the IHOP.
Because we're running out of time, we need to take some more calls. Wildcard Line, welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hi there.
Good morning. This is Jim in Hershey.
Hey, Jim.
And my question's about evil. People desire evil or do evil things, but Satan the devil doesn't give it away, loan, or rent it. Satan the devil must retain complete ownership and control. Say STD must maintain the power of evil. People might imitate it, which feeds Satan the devil, but they can never truly possess it. That would erode the power base of Satan. And the more Satan the devil keeps control, the more STD is empowered, which is the opposite of God or supreme entity. The more love is understood, the more it spreads, and that also builds the base, you know, the existence of love.
But you're not a believer in Satan, are you, Brother Guy?
I didn't say that. I'm saying that I can understand Satan as the absence of good, which is still an entity, is as real as, you know, the holes in the electronic chips that allow the chips to work. It's just that it's not an entity. It's the absence of entity that, because of the good around it, can act exactly the way that, you know, Jim's describing. I think it's a very interesting insights he's got there.
Throughout the universe, you're a scientist, you're a religious person. What do you think the soul is?
You know, the soul was a Greek idea to try to explain the way that people work. It is sort of the best idea we've come up with, but it is an explanation. You can actually recover Christian theology without using this Greek idea of the soul. It's just really hard to do. The best analogy I can come up with that I think relates to how people work today is to think of it like it is analogous to the program that runs a computer. And you can have identical computers, but if they've got different programs running them, and the program can exist even when the computer is long gone, and the idea of the program exists even when the computer is long gone. It's an analogy. It's like all analogies. It fails if you push it too far. But I think that helps a materialist understand how things that are not material nonetheless are real and affect.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. Your turn on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning, brother guy. First of all, I'd like to thank you because listening to you talk is like listening to my old junior high school teacher, science teacher.
He's refreshing, isn't he?
Brought back real fond memories. One of the things that he had us do in class was he came up with a theory of time travel, and he gave us the task of finding the equation for this theory and submitting it to, it was like a junior scientist group.
Uh-huh.
And we got to go to a science camp. But his theory is that if you're going down the highway, say at 25 or 35 miles an hour, and you get passed by another vehicle, and the other vehicle is out of your sight, and so you speed up to a speed of, let's say, 65 or 75 to catch that vehicle and pass that vehicle. In theory, yet elementary theory, you just did time travel.
I can see the analogy, yeah. It sounds like you had a really, really clever junior high teacher.
Yeah, he was.
Science is so much more than just memorizing facts. It's playing with them, like he was having you doing. That's great.
Another thought I have is about atheists. Would it be a true statement to say that an atheist can't be a true atheist without first accepting the existence of God?
There was a famous book on the origin of atheism by Michael Buckley. It makes the point, to be an atheist, you have to have a very clear idea of the God it is you don't believe in.
Right.
If you don't know who the God is, then how can you not believe in him? There's a famous story of an old Italian atheist, famous philosopher at his deathbed, and someone comes in to try to convert him, and he says, "Get out of here!" He says, "I don't believe in the Catholic God, and that's the real God. Why should I believe in yours?"
2012. Are we going to have a celestial event? What do you think?
Not that I've heard of. I've seen some of the people have told me about the different theories. I don't see that the year is going to be any less or more interesting than any other year.
Well, we're going to be on the air then. We'll have to find out. It'll
exactly,
be a Friday night.
One way to find out.
West of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Mike. I'm from Crestline, California.
Hi.
A little while ago, you were talking about whether animals are self-aware or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed which side of that you came down on.
I didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I just wondered if you...
So you didn't miss it.
About 2 months ago, I heard on KNX 1070 out here, all news station, that the scientists had discovered that dolphins have names for each other.
Hmm.
And did you hear that? Did you hear that?
No, I hadn't heard about that.
It was on KNX 1070, which is an all news station in L.A.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And my point is that if an animal has a name for itself and a name for his friends, that proves self-awareness.
That would be pretty good evidence of it, yeah. Of course, I wondered what my cats would call me, as, you know, just the food.
Brother Guy.
No, I think it was mostly Can Opener Man.
Do you get into heated discussions with people about your views?
Not really. I'm not one for heated discussions, and I'm also not one to think that I've got all the answers. So I'm fascinated to hear what other people have.
Well, that's a good listener, too. Someone who doesn't have all the answers.
Mm-hmm. I don't even have all the questions.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hello?
I was
wondering, I wanted to ask the brother guy what the church's view is on ghosts. Because I've been seeing them for a while, and I talked to some other Christians, and they said that they were either demons or they're angels.
Does the Vatican have a specific view on ghosts?
Not that I know of.
But they do believe in exorcisms because they have priests going all over the place doing
this. That's true, but of course, whatever you believe is the cause of the exorcism, if you've ever seen somebody who has need of an exorcist, they've got a real problem, and they need some way of dealing with it. On whether the rite of exorcism helps them or not depends on the way that they understand the situation that they're in.
True, and not all of it is a demonic possession.
No, but it's a serious problem, whatever you call it.
Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir.
Hey, long-time listener. So it's great to get to finally call in.
Great, thank you.
I wanted to say that about the issue a while back, the caller who said that he thought that if extraterrestrial life existed, it would destroy Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been my opinion that that would sort of verify religion, because if you have an all-powerful being who could create the whole universe, I don't think he would be so uncreative as to only come up with us.
Yep, and I think it was John Herschel, who was the William Herschel's son, the son of the guy who discovered Uranus, made exactly that same point. He was the founder of the Royal Astronomical Society. So you're in good company with that idea.
Okay, thank you so much. A couple more calls, and then we're going to wrap it up for the night. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, this is Charles from Berkeley.
Hey, Charles.
Hi there. And here's my thought. Okay, 65 cultures, or more than 65 cultures, on 5 continents, have in some way related to the idea that something of significance will happen in the first third of the 21st century, or that's how we see time
mm-hmm.
now. And a majority of these cultures also talk about visitation from the gods or the beings from above or the whatever they might be. Now, Father Guy, you're great. You're very good, and I really enjoy listening to you. And maybe you don't have the full insight, but I'm sort of guessing that the Vatican's sort of like hedging their bets. They may be onto something, and they're saying, okay, look, we're not sure about this, but let's build an observatory, get some good science guys in there. You know, let's see what might be coming around the corner. Any thoughts about that?
Well, if that's true, then they're really prescient, because the observatory was founded in 1891 in its current form and actually goes back to 1582. So, you know, if I'm supposed to be looking for something, nobody's told me.
Did you know Stephen Hawking believes that he may be the reincarnated Galileo?
I had not heard that. That's a new one on me.
Do you believe in reincarnation?
I've seen no evidence for it.
See, that's the scientist in you
yep.
coming out now,
yep.
isn't it? You must tear yourself apart all the time.
No, I
mean, where's the evidence? You believe in God, right?
Yeah.
Where's the evidence?
I see it in my life every day.
What do you mean you see it in your life every day? That's not evidence.
Of course not.
That's faith.
But faith is the response to things that happen to you. Faith doesn't come first.
So why don't you have faith that we've been visited by extraterrestrials?
Because I haven't had the things happen to me that inspires that faith. Which, you know, seeing evidence, for instance. Yeah, I'm very cautious about this sort of thing because I'm a meteoriticist. I study meteorites. 200 years ago, most people did not believe that rocks fell out of the sky from outer space that landed on Earth. They said people who saw that were superstitious or crazy.
Right, or witches or whatever.
Witches or whatever. Yeah. You know, Thomas Jefferson, when he was told that a couple of Yale professors had a meteorite, is supposed to have said, I'd rather believe that, you know, Yankee professors lied than that rocks fall from the heavens. I'm aware of the fact that what one generation's crackpot theory is another generation's science. But it doesn't happen just because the generations pass. You know, sometimes crackpot theories stay crackpot theories.
Well, that is so true. We're not going to have much time for any more calls, but who do you admire the most in your field?
Right now, Of the people who are in the field, it's hard to say because there are so many. There's a guy, a scientist now who's working at NASA, Alan Stern, and he's doing some great things to make the NASA bureaucracy work. And yet he's also the chief scientist of the spacecraft that's going out to Pluto. So he's fascinated by the science. I admire that tremendously.
Let's get you back again, Brother Guy, all right?
Oh, I'd be delighted.
Anytime. You have a blank check here.
Okay, thank
you. Coast to coast. All right. Brother Guy, he's an expert. He's a Catholic brother, which is not quite a priest, because the priests perform the sacraments. If you're Catholic, you know what I'm talking about. But he's a planetary scientist. He has a PhD in planetary science from the University of Arizona. So he knows what he's talking about. He's a fantastic guest, one of the better guests I've had in a long, long time. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, who's manning the desk this week, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.